Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to The Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I am your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, and I am here to help you stop counting calories, carbs, and fat grams so you can easily get to a healthy weight and get on with your life. How amazing to think about your day, not your diet, right? So let me ask you something. When's the last time you reached for a snack when you were feeling stressed? Stress is one of the most common causes of emotional eating, and creating new stress management skills is the key to making change, making permanent change. But as we all know, it is easier said than done to make any kind of changes, much less this. And that is why I am so excited to have today as my special guest, Devin Burke. He is an author, speaker, coach, workshop facilitator, and founder of Empowerment Wellness Solutions, a company focused on empowering individuals and organizations to increase their health, energy, and performance. Devin helps people wake up with energy to get more done in less time without burning out. He's also the founder, because, you know, he isn't doing enough with his life. He's also the founder of Sleep Science Coach, which helps people stop suffering with sleep problems and start sleeping using a unique holistic approach based in science. And why is this important to you guys? It is important because there is a lot of scientific evidence correlating poor sleeping habits to weight gain for a variety of different reasons, and we're going to get into that later. So today, Devin is going to teach us simple strategies to master stress, how to build resilience to stress, how to master stress, and much more. Welcome, Devin.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
I'm so glad you're here. Yeah. So, you know, we're going to get more into how to deal with stress in a moment, but I'm curious to know your story. How did you get into this field?
Yeah, so actually my story starts as an eight-year-old boy growing up in a family that didn't really know too much about health. So my favorite thing growing up was eating mac and cheese with hot dogs. I know.
Oh.
Yes. Yes. So my parents just didn't know. And as a result of that, I was a pretty sick kid. I had chronic ear infections, so many ear infections that I had to get tubes in my ears, overprescribed antibiotics. And it really wasn't until my grandfather passed away of cancer, he was a smoker, that my mom kind of woke up to, hey, we need to make some changes. She quit smoking. She joined a gym. She started to learn about nutrition. I saw my mom transform into this different person. And then obviously she started to feed us healthier foods. And I was really the one that kind of just got really interested in it. I'm a very curious person. I've always been very curious. And that kind of just set me on this journey to really discover, how do you live a vibrant, healthy life? What does it take? What are the strategies? How do you do that? And I noticed that the healthiest people were always the happiest people. And so that was something that I picked up, and I was like, that's something I want to experience more of in my life. So, that set me off on a journey to study with some of the top health and performance experts in the world, studying nutrition and mindfulness and all these different types of modalities to really be able to support people in their journeys.
Yes, and you guys, he studied with everyone from Tony Robbins to, every sort of guru expert in the field. If you look at devinburke.com and see everyone that he's studied with, he when he says he studied with the experts, it's a long, long, long list of experts. And now you're an expert.
I am. Yeah. I consider myself. I'm first a student, though. First and always a student, but definitely, I've done the work over the last 10 years to really be able to support people the way that I do. And I'm blessed and grateful because it lights me up.
And, I love your point about being a student, because the minute that you sort of rest on your laurels and say, well, I'm an expert,
right,
you stop learning, you stop growing. And so to be able to balance being a student with your expertise is indeed a wonderful thing. So speaking of balance, let's talk about stress.
Yeah, I mean, huge. You know, it's an epidemic of the 21st century, according to the World Health Organization. And I mean, if you just look around, people are stressed out. It creates a lot of suffering.
Yes. And by the way, I want to invite people to join us. If you're listening, you want to talk to Devin about the subject of a question about stress, give us a call at 818-602-4929. We would love to hear what's on your mind. 818-602-4929. You know, one misconception that I've noticed about stress is people think that when you're stressed, it means that you actively know you're suffering. Now, most people know, oh my God, I'm so stressed out. My boss, my kids, my wife, my husband, my partner, whatever it is, you know, they know it. But I what I've actually didn't realize and have found out is that stress can also feel exciting. And that is a misconception that I personally didn't even realize. I will share that. I always thought stress meant, oh, I'm stressed. I didn't realize it meant I'm so excited and I'm doing so much and I'm always like on fire and rushing around and doing things and I love it, that your body doesn't differentiate between, let's call it, good stress and bad stress.
Yes. So I'm so happy that you brought that up, Dr. Nina, because there needs to be a distinction, and there is a distinction. And I call it complementary stress and uncomplementary stress, or eustress and distress. And so there's a stress threshold that we get to, and that's when it becomes chronic, and that's when it becomes damaging. But really, our bodies don't know. And stress isn't necessarily a bad thing, but it's when we don't shift into that rest and digest, that parasympathetic, that relaxation state, that we get in trouble. So that's really, you know, there is a point where even if it's positive stress, because it's exciting and you're doing all these things, if you don't learn to switch off that stress threshold, that's when it really can you burn out. And that's when, you start to, get in the stress triangle. And we could talk about what that is. But
I'd love to hear about the stress triangle. But quick question first. So Devin is visiting L.A. from Florida, where he is based, and he has experienced the L.A. traffic, which is stressful. So what do you do if you live in a city like L.A. or many, many parts of the country where just getting to work and getting home is in itself a stressful experience? How do you deal with that?
Yeah, that's a great question. So stress isn't going away, right? And we're going to deal with it every single day. So you need to have a simple strategy of reframing what stress means to you. So for instance, a lot of times we get in traffic and we're like, oh my God, I'm going to be late. This is, all these stories come up around, traffic. Traffic equals stress. But you could say traffic equals learning time, right? So you could reframe it and redefine the meaning of what traffic means. And that's going to open up some possibility. So that's one way. But I mean, in its simplest form is just breathing. So much of us, we forget to breathe. And that puts us, if you look at a baby in a crib, a baby breathes from its stomach. Mm-hmm. It's in rest and digest, parasympathetic. But for us, when we're stuck in traffic, it's, it's our chest. We're breathing from our chest. And that's activating, cortisol and adrenaline and all these stress hormones. And so just if you're in traffic, just breathe. Just literally take a
breathing. I'm breathing from my stomach. I'm like,
yeah, breathe into your stomach.
I think I breathe from my neck. That's not
most
good.
Of us do. Most of us do. A lot of people hold tension and stress in their neck and in their chest. And we have to retrain our bodies to get into that deep relaxation state, which is, breathing from the diaphragm.
So tell us a little bit about the science. You've mentioned parasympathetic and cortisol and all of that. So give us the science of this.
Yeah. So I'll keep it pretty basic. I don't want to get into the weeds here too much.
Basic is good.
But yeah, we have the autonomic nervous system, and it's either we're in fight or flight, which is we're either, it's like we're running away from a tiger, or we're in rest and digest, which is the relaxation response. And throughout our days, we're switching back, and at least we should be switching back and forth between these. And oftentimes what happens is we don't, and we stay in this fight or flight, and that becomes our new norm. And in that fight or flight, that's when we're releasing these hormones like cortisol, which causes belly fat, right? Adrenaline, noradrenaline, all these hormones get dumped into our system. And if we don't clear that out, if we don't shift into that parasympathetic, which is the rest and digest state, we're not going to be digesting our food as optimally as we could, right? They've done studies that actually show the stomach acid changes if you are in a sympathetic versus a parasympathetic state before you eat. So it affects our digestion, it affects our energy, it affects our mental clarity. All of these things get affected. And what happens is most people don't realize that they're in a chronic state of stress, and that becomes their new normal. And they don't realize that when they shift out of that, or they relearn to shift back into that parasympathetic, it opens up so much energy. And then in that energy, you could be more present, more joyful, more creative, and your performance enhances. And, you know, it's just life gets a lot better.
And that is a great explanation. It makes a lot of sense, because also when your stomach, because there's a mind-body connection.
Yes.
So when your stomach is filled with, you know, cortisol or whatever, you're not, science was not my thing, right? It's psychology, not science. But when you're, so if the balance is wrong in your stomach, that could lead to, say, leaky gut. Yes. And inflammation and autoimmune disease. And so it has so many implications. So basically, my husband, who's like, has a new job, works from home, but working from home means he's always working. So he doesn't take a lunch break. He just works straight through, picks up our kid from camp or whatever, and then keeps working, and then goes to boxing. So, and says that that's his relaxation. No, no, no. Boxing is fight, right? Boxing is not, what did you call it?
Rest and digest.
Rest and digest.
Yeah. Parasympathetic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's constantly, even though he thinks he's all, David, if you're listening, this is for you. he thinks he's like in a good place because he's balancing with boxing, but really he's just constantly on and in a state of stress, good stress for him.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the techniques is exercise or movement, right? But there's different types, you know, exercise is a stress, but there's different types of exercise. So for your husband, David, you know, boxing is that's a stress. So it's a good stress, but if he's not managing his or recharging throughout the day, it can become a bad stress,
right?
So it's really, part of this is really knowing yourself, knowing, you know, really checking in with how much, you know, how do you deal with stress, which I do want to talk about that stress triangle, because it's,
yes,
it's an amazing way of kind of explaining this. But yeah, so exercise is an amazing way of releasing stress, but it's also, if it's not done properly or the wrong forms, or if you're doing it, you know, too much exercise, then it can be a negative, actually. So you gotta, you know, David, if you're listening, you know, you gotta check in with that.
That's from Devin, David. That's not from me. That's from the expert. Okay, so now I have ammunition for when I tell him, like, this is not balanced. So tell us about the stress triangle.
Yeah.
What is that?
Okay, so the stress triangle is a framework that I developed simply to explain how we manage stress currently. And it's important to understand that most of us were never taught how to manage stress. We learned from people who didn't know how to manage their own, right? And the stress triangle, if you envision a triangle, at the top,
I'm gonna make one.
We can make one.
Make one right now.
Yeah. So at the top of the triangle is the first way we manage stress, and it's lashing out in frustration, lashing out in anger. This is like kicking the dog, getting a fight with the employee. I know. Who does that? If you're listening to this, you better not kick your dog.
Oh, you better not kick
your
dog.
You better not. But lashing out. So lashing out, and what this creates, Dr. Nina, is this creates a loss in relationships. Okay? So that's one pattern. The next pattern, if you go to the bottom quadrant of the triangle, is tuning out. And this is with social media, this is with Netflix, this could be with work. This is, you know, it could be shopping, right? And tuning out, when we tune out, it creates a loss of time. And then the last way is, and you're very familiar with this with your practice, I'm sure, is numbing out. And people use food, drugs, and alcohol, and that creates a loss of health. So in the middle of this triangle is stress. And when we don't learn how to get out of this triangle, what happens is we burn out. And this is how most of us currently deal with stress. And no one ever has taught us, you know, not in school, not, you know, in church, no one has ever taught us, how do we get out of this triangle? You know, how does that happen? And unfortunately, a lot of people experience great number of, you know, pain, loss of relationships, loss of health, you know, wasting a lot of time and energy because we just were never taught how to get out of it.
And that makes me think about another thing we're not taught in our culture, which is we're not taught how to feel our feelings.
Yes.
We're told, don't feel that way, be grateful. Hey, positive think that away. Don't be sad. Here are all the reasons you have to feel good about your life. And so we're not even allowed to feel bad, and therefore we don't know how to manage any kind of uncomfortable feeling. And that's when we lash out, tune out, or numb out. Mm-hmm. And so there's when I say, hey, I'm going to teach you how to deal with your eating issues, your eating problem is not an eating problem. It is a problem in learning how to relate to yourself, how to respond to yourself, mm-hmm. how to deal with what's going on in life. And people just want to say, oh, no, it's not that. Just give me a diet. I'm like, no.
Yeah, because it's scary.
It's scary to feel your feelings.
It is scary. And that's really the first step to getting out of this triangle, is to feel the good feelings and the bad feelings. And a lot of times we don't want to feel those bad feelings. But when we know that they're just temporary and that is the way out, you know, that's the first step. And it takes courage. I mean, it really does. A lot of us, we don't like to feel bad. We don't like to feel these feelings. It's scary.
Yeah, who wants to feel bad? Nobody wants to feel bad.
It's pain or pleasure, right? We're motivated by pain or pleasure. So,
And then when you think, oh, there's something wrong with me, when shame gets involved, mm-hmm. oh, I'm feeling this bad feeling, so there's something wrong with me that I'm even having this feeling. I should be able to not feel this.
Right.
Then you have shame on top of it, which just exacerbates all of this. So,
yeah.
Okay, so what is your number one stress-relieving tip? What's the thing that you think is the most important for people to do differently?
Okay, so, I mean, we already kind of talked about it, but breathing. I mean, it's so simple. But just because it's simple doesn't mean that it's not powerful and profound. And it's so true that if you literally right now, for those of you that are listening to this, you know, check in right now. Where are you breathing from? Are you breathing from your stomach or are you breathing from your chest? Because if you're breathing from your chest, you're stressed. That kind of rhymed.
Hey.
Let's all take a breath.
I like it. Okay. And you guys, by the way, if you go to Devin's website, you can get the Stress Mastery Toolkit, devinburke.com, devinburke.com. And he has all of these techniques to help you. And progressive muscle relaxation, by the way, is one of my favorite things to recommend to people, because if you say, hey, just relax, how do you relax? Last week I did it on the show. Like, you know, don't be afraid to look silly. Here, I'm doing it too. So, because you need something to relax against.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it's important to talk about too, how we store stress in our bodies.
Yes.
So a lot of us don't realize that we store tension and stress in our bodies. And I like to give the example of, if our bodies are like a balloon, right? We don't want to be a deflated balloon, but we don't want to be a balloon that's about to burst. And so we kind of want to oscillate between the two, and sort of our bodies are trying to maintain sort of some pressure and tension in the body. Not too much, not too little, right? Too little is like on the couch. Too much is like you're in the stress triangle. Right. So, you know, we store stress on our neck, in our shoulders, right? So check in. Where do you store stress? Is it your neck and shoulders?
Totally.
For you? Okay.
Totally.
Yeah, so for me, it's my lower back. That's the second area most people store stress. Some people store it in their stomach. You know, some people store it in their face. But it's important to understand, like, where do you store your stress? Because it's your body actually is telling you, like, hey, when you start to feel tension and pressure or tightness, that's your body telling you, hey, you are stressed. You need to take a break. You need to rest, recharge, and you need to do something to clear that out of the body, because if you don't, it unfortunately can translate into disease. So it's really important to, number one, have what I call stress awareness, which is, where are you storing your stress? And once you have that awareness, what are you doing to get out of it? And that's, you know, get some of these strategies we could talk about, the box breathing, the progressive muscle relaxation. I mean, there's so many strategies and techniques. But here's the thing. No strategy or technique, you know, the best strategy or technique only works if you work it. And this is the thing. And most people think they just get so caught up in their day with the kids and with work and with life that we just forget. And this is, you know, you have to create some awareness around this, because it will open your world up when you do.
It's that now very trite thing about, if you go on a plane and the flight attendants say, parents, if the oxygen masks drop, put them on yourself, not your kids, because you're no good to anyone if you don't have oxygen. So you have to be, what you're saying is, be mindful about your oxygen. You've got to give yourself what you need first before you go and do everything that you need to do in your day.
Yeah, and we've all heard that. But here's the thing, there's a different, you know, try it on, experience it. Because a lot of times we hear things and we're like, I know. You know, I've heard that. But until you actually have the experience of that, it's not true or it's not real. So, you know, if you're listening to this, I would say, you know, try this on. Really take that analogy of the oxygen mask. Try it on for a week and see if that makes a difference in your level of presence and your level of joy in your sleep. You know, just try it on and see.
Yes, just do it. Just do it. Simple. Now, I mean, one reason why people don't try it on, or they try it on and they don't do it, when I'm thinking about my own patients or clients, I've heard, oh, well, that's selfish. Mm. That's selfish. As if you're either selfless and giving up yourself to take care of other people, which is, you know, stressful to be selfless. Or if you're not being selfless, you're selfish, as if there's no in between. And in between is, hey, you take care of yourself and other people.
Right. Why does it have to be either or? Can't it be both and?
Exactly.
And I think, you know, people need to give themselves permission. That's the thing. A lot, especially here in America, you know, we're so caught up in, like, you know, trying to be a certain way. Right, make this money, have this car, have this house, have this lifestyle. There's so much pressure on everyone here in the United States. It's like, if you go to another country, it's not like that. You know, I was in Mexico last month. I got married in Mexico.
Oh, you are a newlywed.
I am a newlywed.
Congratulations. Wait a minute. Wait. You know. Yay! Congratulations, Devin and his wife.
I did it. Yeah, and you know, it was so refreshing to see the people in Mexico. They're more present. They've given, it's part of the culture, but they take naps in the afternoon. Like, how many people take naps here in the United States? You know, it's like, it's that's seen as like, oh, if you take a nap, you're lazy.
Yeah.
You know, if you sleep, you're lazy. But we need to really start to shift our perspective and start to give ourselves more permission to take care of ourselves. And then in giving ourselves permission, it allows us to, you know, again, to really try some of these things on and then experience a new result.
Yeah, and we have to, because Americans, I know there are people listening who are, you know, in Europe in different countries, Australia, New Zealand, but Americans, which hopefully you're taking naps in the afternoon, you people. But Americans are the most overstressed, unhappiest, and unhealthiest people in any industrialized country by far.
Yeah, it's crazy. And it's built into our culture, really. I mean, it's and that's why we have a stress epidemic. I mean, literally the World Health Organization said the 21st century illness is stress. And burnout actually just got recognized, I believe it was like 2 or 3 weeks ago, by the World Health Organization as a real syndrome. Yeah. Burnout.
Yeah.
I mean, we've known it for forever. I mean, people know, right? Burnout's a thing, but it's actually now recognized. And, you know, we need to change. It's time to really shift. And I think that's why a lot of the mindfulness practices and sort of this resurgence of going back to basics is really starting to kind of integrate itself back into our society, because we need it.
And that's why everyone's all about wellness, because there's a need for just something calmer and more soothing. We need to have it in our bodies and our minds, but sometimes a relaxed mind, you know, a relaxed mind, the body will follow. A relaxed body, your mind will follow. So it's all, you can't really separate it. Tell us about resilience to stress. We can't change it. How do we create more resilience?
Yeah, so this is, I mean, the best thing you possibly could do to create stress resilience is meditation. I mean, so many people talk about it. I mean, that's why it's a resurgence of this whole mindfulness movement. But it's really necessary in the world that we live in, with the technology, with the fast pace, with all the things that we have coming at us. It's necessary. Meditation is necessary, and it doesn't have to be, you know, some esoteric monk meditation. It could be so simple as just giving yourself 10 minutes just to breathe, or, you know, it can be something more esoteric. But there has to be in your day a time where you meditate. And meditation could be come in the form of prayer, right? It could be, there's a lot of different ways to meditate, but that is going to prepare your body and mind for when you go out into the world to, you know, be resilient to that stress, to maybe have a moment in between that reaction so you can respond in a way that's more appropriate, that creates less stress.
And I absolutely agree with you, but let me tell you what a devil's advocate response might be. Yeah. From some of my people, my patients, who say, I can't meditate because they can't be with themselves. Mm. So I have sort of I have a comment and a question. So they can't be with themselves because it's too uncomfortable. When they're with themselves, they're not with a kind, gentle, nurturing, nourishing, compassionate part of themselves. They're with an attack dog. So they're alone, and they start thinking, you're not doing this right. They often talk to themselves in second person. You're not doing this right. This, you know, why can't you meditate? What's wrong with you? And by the way, oh, cookies, right? So, and that's where you get into the triangle. My recommendation to them, because I used to say, I don't recommend meditation until you can be with yourself. Mm. But what about guided meditation? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, guided meditation is great. And what's awesome in today's world is we have these amazing apps.
Calm.
We have Headspace. There's a new one that just launched called Journey Live, where you actually, it's like a Peloton, sort of. It's like a live class where you're meditating with a meditation teacher, a bunch of other people, so you don't feel so isolated.
Oh,
what's it idea. Called? It's called Journey Live. They just launched, I believe, last month. It's so cool. So, yes, we have all these tools available. And, yeah, if it's scary to kind of sit with yourself, yeah, absolutely, you know, use a tool so that, you know, somebody's guiding you into a, you know, progressive muscle relaxation or, you know, some sort of mantra-based meditation. But, yeah, it's really finding what works for you. And just like there's not one way to exercise or one way to eat, there's not one way to meditate. So it's really just, where are you at right now with whatever you're struggling with, and what tool is appropriate for you to use right now?
And the other thing I like about guided meditation is that sometimes people can then identify with that cool, you know, calming, nice voice and start to talk to themselves in that way instead of the mean way. Because what happens, of course, is you talk to yourself in a mean way, you feel bad, you don't have any coping strategies, you feel stressed, you don't have any coping strategies, there's food.
Yeah.
Or whatever else. I mean, in my a book I just did on addictions, it's all kinds of addictions, but it's all the same root. It's not being able to respond to yourself in a way that's healthy and healing.
Yeah, it takes a lot of courage. You know, to really deal with some of the doubts and the negative self-talk. I mean, I have it. Everybody has it. It's just at what level and what, you know, what's the volume on that, right? So it's like, how can we learn to turn the volume down, and just really understanding, like, well, what is that self-talk? and challenging it. Like, you know, I had it this morning on the way driving over here.
You did?
I did.
Talk to me. Why did you have that?
You know, every time I do a speech, a workshop, a presentation, an interview, you know, it's the imposter syndrome. You know, who are you to tell other people what to do or how to be better? You know, I still have that voice. And so I have a strategy now. When I hear that voice, I just say, okay, get in the back seat. You know, I envision it as like this little thing. And I was like, get in the back seat. And then I just focus on, hey, it's not about me. You know, it's not about me. And when I focus my attention off of myself, all of a sudden I'm like, I can breathe again.
Right. And notice how you went from who are you, talking to yourself in the second person, mean, to then when you're in an I space, you feel confident.
Yeah.
But when you start talking to yourself from that second person stance, which is not nice. I love your get in the back seat, get in the trunk, go away, get in the other car behind me.
Exactly.
But also, if you go, who am I to do that? Sometimes it's really easy to speak in second person. Mm. But when you say, who am I to say that, it doesn't feel right. So the next time you feel it, I hope you don't feel it, but try the I thing too, because obviously you are not an imposter. Look at everything on your website. Look at how you're speaking. Look at your knowledge.
Oh, thank you.
Yes. I'm very glad you're here.
I'm glad to be here.
So let's talk about sleep, because your other area of expertise is sleep.
Yes.
And sleep and weight, there's a correlation. Talk to us about that.
Yeah. So, you know, I believe sleep is actually the foundation of health. And if you think about it, you could skip a meal, you could skip a workout, but try skipping a night of sleep and showing up the next day. It's not happening. And not, you know, it's so from a physiological standpoint, when you don't sleep, you actually the next morning, you're in a pre-diabetic state. And you're craving sugar like crazy. That's why you're craving the sugar and the sweets when you don't sleep well, is because your insulin, the hormone, you know, that shuttles glucose from your blood into your cells, gets thrown off. And so for those of you that have issues sleeping and you wonder why you wake up and you're like craving, you know, donuts and all these sweets, it's because it's a hormonal response. So it's so critical. And then not only that, your cortisol level. I mean, that's the stress hormone that stores fat. That gets all out
Especially
of whack.
Especially in the belly area.
Where we don't want it.
Yeah.
Where we seem to always store it. So really sleep is so critical. And it's one of the things that most people don't think about. Honestly, I didn't think about sleep. It was really last year that I dove deep in the sleep science and realized how important it is. And it was after, you know, helping a bunch of my clients who had a lot of sleep issues really resolve their sleep issues, and then looking at the science of why sleep's so important for our brains and for our bodies and for our performance. And I was like, whoa, this is like, why isn't so more people talking about this? And then, so that just really set me on this deep dive into studying, okay, well, like, how do we optimize our sleep? How do we get sleep if we're having trouble sleeping? And so that's kind of, it's personal interest and now professional, you know, passion.
So, okay, someone's having trouble sleeping and they're saying, yeah, I wake up, I'm starving, I eat all the wrong things, but I don't know what else to do. I try to go to sleep and I just sit there like, no, 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 no. What can I do? Devin, help me. What can I do? What do you tell them?
Yeah. So there's so much I could tell them. So much. And I would say the first thing I would suggest is, what do you do before you go to sleep? You know, what is the ritual before you go to sleep? For most people, it's watching the news or TV, and it's full of negativity. It's full of things that keep that stress switch on. Right. And it's like, no, you need to do the opposite. You need to have a ritual that prepares your body and mind to do what it naturally is designed to do, which is sleep. And if you ask somebody who has no trouble sleeping, what do you do to fall asleep? What do they say? Nothing. But if you ask somebody that has sleep problems, what do they do? They're like, oh, I try all these things, and it's like this tension and pressure builds up. So having a what I call a bedtime ritual, where you allow your body, you know, a window, an hour, to get off the electronics, to, you know, meditate, stretch, have a hot shower, you know, make love, do something that relaxes you, listen to music, off of technology will retrain your body to get into that relaxation state, which is going to help you stay asleep throughout the entire night. Now, you know, there's all different types of insomnia and clinical diagnosis for acute insomnia and, you know, chronic insomnia and all that. But really, if you just did that one thing, a lot of times I have clients that are like, yeah, I just did that and like I'm able to sleep.
And there's something about staying off of electronics, because what those electronics do to your brain is not conducive to sleeping.
Totally. And not only that, Dr. Nina, is the blue light coming off of the devices mimics the sun. And so we have this thing called melatonin, I'm sure most people have heard of, that sleep hormone. It blocks that. So melatonin gets released from our pineal gland. It gets, and it blocks that. So melatonin is not, when you're on your screens late at night, that blue light, your body doesn't know that it's time to go to sleep. And that melatonin faucet's not getting turned on, and that's why you're staring at the ceiling, get frustrated, and then landing yourself in the kitchen.
That completely resonates, because like a couple of nights ago, I was really sleepy, and then I was like, oh, let me just check my Instagram. And then like an hour later, I was wired.
Yeah, totally.
I just fell into the Instagram well.
The black hole.
The black hole of Instagram. And then that led to the black hole of Facebook, and then my emails, and then I was wide awake. So what you're saying actually completely resonates.
Yeah, from a cognitive standpoint, you know, when we're on social media or checking email, it's like we're getting the reward center in our brain, you know, dopamine, serotonin, oxytocin, all these like feel good hormones are getting released. Maybe not in email, unless you're getting good emails, but with looking, how many people liked or shared my thing, we're getting this hit. And it's crazy. It can become addiction. I mean, it's a real thing. You're the specialist on this with addiction, so I'm sure you have some things to say about that. But it's insane, really. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't actually like the term addiction, because I think it's negative and pejorative. I know we're a little bit off topic, but it's like a frenemy, right? It's doing something for you, and it's also hurting you. Mm. But until you find a different way of having that same positive response, it's a friend and an enemy. So you've got to figure out how to be a friend to yourself in a healthier way. Otherwise, it's hard to break the habit. So it's a coping strategy.
Yeah, great point. Yeah, it's so true. What do you replace it with? What is that?
Self-talk. Crucial.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's what you're talking about also with stress, not only breathing and all of the things that we've been talking about, but the way you relate to yourself. Mm-hmm. When you say, hey, negative voice in my head, imposter syndrome voice, go away. You're taking care of yourself with, there's a healthy voice in your head that says, I'm not listening to you, la 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 la, go away. Not that you say it like that.
It kind of does sound like that,
actually. La la la. And so that everything in life, it changes when you talk to yourself in a positive, encouraging way and be curious instead of critical.
I heard this amazing I think it's a parable, or from the Indians, I believe, like what it's about two wolves. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes. Yes.
I love
that. Which one do you listen to?
Yeah.
Tell the story.
You probably can tell it better than me. I'm not the expert on this story, but
I actually talked about it maybe last year, about the two wolves and the kid who talks to his grandfather.
Yeah, yeah.
And the grandfather talks to him about, the two wolves, and one of them is mean and bitter and nasty and cruel and awful, and the other wolf is, these are wolves within us. The other wolf is kind and I'm butchering the story. Sorry,
no,
any Native American
way
person
better
out
than
there.
What I would have
all
said.
Right.
So you're doing great.
Okay, okay. Get to the back of the car. La 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 la. And the other wolf is kind and generous and encouraging and interested and soothing. And the little boy says, well, which of these wolves, that you, grandfather, you say that there's a battle within us, which one is going to win? And the grandfather says, whichever one you feed.
You did a great job. That was awesome. I want to just give you an applause. You got to give yourself an applause.
Okay, I'll give myself like a, I'll give myself.
Yeah! That's awesome.
Oh, I cut it off. I don't know what that's about. I'm sure it has meaning, but whatever. So yes, when we encourage ourselves and we practice, just like your stress relieving, practice makes progress, not perfection.
I love that. It's powerful. Yeah, and so many of us, we're seeking this perfection. I actually have an amazing story of a client I worked with who, you know, all of her challenges came from perfection, or this idea of she wasn't perfect. And as soon as I got her and she understood that she gets to define what perfection is, and she defined it for herself, I mean, it was an amazing transformation for this woman. It literally changed her life. She lost 50 pounds. Her relationship got, like, with her husband improved, with her kids, with, like, everything opened up. And this whole perfection thing, it's like, it's crazy. But it's like we feel it. And it's talking about social media and Instagram. I know we're kind of going a sidetrack here from sleep. But yeah, it builds up this, hey, if my life doesn't look like this, I'm not enough.
And that'll keep you awake at night.
It will. And it does for most people, right?
And of course, we're looking at pictures of people who don't perhaps look like that in their actual lives. And that makes us think, well, how can we, you know, how can I ever live up to that? And I'm so far from that. And not realizing that the person you're seeing does not usually wake up and go out and live their day like that. Because I know people who are models who do not look how they look like in their photos.
Yeah, there's a great Dove commercial, I think.
Yes.
It was like so powerful, and it's so true. And even knowing that, though, sometimes we seem to forget it, right? It's like that commercial, I think, was incredible, and you know, but somehow, even if watching that commercial, we can somehow fall back into that this like comparison perfectionism sort of mindset.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow, we just got to constantly remind ourselves, be the keepers of the gate at our minds of like what's true.
Theodore Roosevelt said, comparison is the thief of joy.
Love that.
Yeah. So Teddy Roosevelt.
Teddy.
He really knew what he was talking about.
He nailed it.
Yeah. And that, of course, it's stressful. Everything goes back to, as you said, goes back to stress, because here we are feeling bad about ourselves because we don't look like that person. Our life isn't like that person. Oh, that person, I just read a story on Instagram who this woman like came to America with $6 and now has a $35 million company and goes all over the world and her Instagram life looks perfect. You know? And I'm sure people are like, oh my God, I don't have a $35 million life and I didn't come from $6 and what's wrong with me and why don't I have... And then that chatter starts and that makes you stress, because when we believe our thoughts, our negative thoughts, our mean thoughts, we feel stressed.
Totally. It's such a good point. Most of the stress that we experience today is perceived stress. It's self-created. It's in our mind. We're not getting chased by tigers. We're not, you know, it's like it's all in our heads today. And so learning how to really understand that and really have some tools to work with that is so critical. And we're not really taught, you know, unless you are lucky enough to work with an amazing doctor or learn from, you know, someone who's been taught by some gurus or whatever, right? It's like,
who is now a guru himself.
I am not your guru. then it's, you know, it's, you just don't know. You don't know that there's a better way. You might not even know that's happening, right? And it's so sad. And that's why one of my missions is to really, you know, get these tools and these strategies to more people, because, you know, life can be so much better when you have them, and it just opens up possibility.
And you've seen that with your mom and like a radical transformation. It's never too late. I mean, that's the other thing. It doesn't matter how old you are or how young you are. It is never too late to make changes. Okay, now for a very controversial question.
Okay, give it to me.
Okay, let's do it. Coffee.
It's so funny. I love this question. I get it all the time. Most people have a love affair with the Starbucks woman. And I don't blame them because coffee is the number one abused drug. It is a drug, caffeine. All right, let's talk coffee. One cup of coffee is okay. It's really, here's the deal. It's if you're drinking coffee, multiple times throughout the day, it absolutely is affecting your quality of sleep. Because there's a little thing that builds up in our body-mind called adenosine. And what caffeine does, it blocks the receptor in our brain where it tells us that, hey, you're tired, right? So, if you have a cup of coffee in the morning or the early afternoon, it's not going to, the half-life of caffeine is about 6 to 7 hours. So it means it's in your system for 12 to 14, right? So, if you're relying on coffee to get you through your day, then that's a problem. But if you have a cup in the morning and you're enjoying it and it's part of your ritual, then, it's okay. And then I get the question, well, hey, Devin, I can drink coffee and go right to sleep. So it must not be a problem for me. Well, if I hooked you up to a sleep study and actually showed you the quality of sleep, you're not getting the slow wave sleep. And that's where our brains actually, this fluid washes over our brain. It's called the glyphatic system that removes the toxic proteins and all these different things that cause Alzheimer's and all these other brain diseases. That's not happening.
And anyone who has a Fitbit and you look at your sleep, you can see how badly you may be sleeping.
Yeah, it's interesting. So I'm kind of a technology nerd. And with sleep tracking, there's an amazing device. It's way better than the Fitbit. It's called the Oura Ring. And I have all my clients buy it.
The Oura Ring?
Oura Ring. I'm wearing one right now, actually.
The Oura Ring.
So this is the most advanced sleep tracking device out. And it accurately measures your heart rate variability, your body temperature, the stage of sleep that you're in. And it's pretty amazing. And up until this point, there wasn't technology. Fitbit and Apple Watch, they kind of can do it, but it's not accurate enough to really, it's really not accurate enough yet. This technology is amazing. It actually, it's pretty cool.
And guys, it's aesthetically pleasing. It looks good too. So this is important.
It does. Well, it used to not. This is the second version. And I believe it's a company in Norway. The first version kind of looked like a big rock candy ring. And then they got the technology down, so it actually kind of looks just like a regular ring.
It looks good.
Yeah, and it's pretty cool. So it gives you a readiness score in the morning. So every morning I wake up, you can see, okay, how ready am I for the day based off of your activities the previous day, how your sleep efficiency, your sleep latency, your body temperature, all these different things it factors in. So it's a pretty cool device.
It looks like a very cool device. I might need one. Now, let me ask you, how long, say someone makes a commitment, they're listening to us today, and they're thinking, Devin is making a lot of sense, I'm committed to making some changes, I'm going to start breathing, I'm going to sleep better. How long until people start to feel results and see results, and what might those results look like?
Yeah, great question. And it's a hard one to answer, because everyone's kind of in a different place. So it's really tough to answer. So a lot of times for people that I work with that have chronic sleep issues, it could be a couple of weeks. It could be 2 weeks. I've helped people that have literally chronic insomnia, and within 2 weeks they're sleeping. So
wow.
but I can't, I don't guarantee, and everyone's different, and but here's the thing, we all have different levels of tolerance for stress. We all have different lives, that we work in different environments. Some people have kids, other people don't, it's like, so it really just depends. But when you start to practice some of the things that we're talking about, you're going to feel it right away. I mean, you'll feel it right away. If you really try it on, if you don't half-ass it, right? If you really give it a shot, you'll feel it. It'll make a difference.
So if you commit to even say, take the next 3 days, practice breathing, be aware of the negative self-talk, don't look at any kind of television or technology for an hour and a half before you go to sleep, only drink coffee in the morning, just 3 days. You could do anything for 3 days. Chances are by the end of the weekend, you're going to be feeling better.
I can almost guarantee that. And you know, I would say, think about why. Why is it important? Because a lot of times we hear things and we're like, oh, that sounds good, or maybe that works for someone else. But until you're connected with why it's important, like, why is it important for you to show up with more energy, with more joy, with more presence, with more confidence? Why is it important for you to get better sleep? You know, until you attach a why to a what, you know, the chances of you actually continuing to do some of this stuff are probably pretty slim. So check in with yourself. You know, why right now? Like, you know, who needs you? Is it your kids? Is it your husband, your wife? Is it, you know, your job? You know, who needs you to show up? And when you're connected to that and it's someone outside of yourself, then, you know, the chances that you're going to really put into place some of these things are going to greatly increase.
And that is a beautiful way to encourage people to take care of themselves. I love that, and that is a perfect ending to our show today. This hour went so fast.
Wow. Yeah.
Didn't it?
Did.
Time flies when you're having an interesting, optimistic, full of information kind of conversation. So I just want to thank you again for being here today. You can get more information from Devin, connect with Devin on devinburke.com. Check him out. He has a lot to say, as you can tell. So, Devin, thank you so much for being here today. And thanks, everyone, for listening. I am here every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific, and I will see you next week. Thanks again.
Thanks.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.